T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Thanks so much for joining us today. It is our Ask the Expert Hour, and today the world of estates, trusts, and wills, and financial planning. And we're pleased to be joined by Kate Meyer from Wealth Enhancement Group. Kate, pleasure to visit with you.
Thanks. Good to be here.
And folks may be familiar with your voice. You've joined Bruce and Peg on Your Money Sunday mornings here on CCO over the years.
Yep, I've been here periodically.
Yeah, and over the years, on rare occasion when I've sat in for Denny Long, it's always fascinating to hear Bruce and Peg and all their knowledge. And it's an amazing team at Wealth Enhancement Group, isn't it?
Yeah, we like to work as a team. Instead of everybody for themselves, we kind of have everybody helps each other out. So if the one person has a question, they can ask pretty much anybody, the whole company, and somebody will answer. And then, you know, we have our little team of specialists right in the middle who like to be in the thick of all of it.
Yeah, and you're one of those.
Yeah, I'm the estate planning expert.
Yeah, and you have been at it for a long time. Tell us a little bit about your background.
Well, I've been at Wealth Enhancement Group for a little over 11 years now. About the same time I started working at Wealth Enhancement Group, I also started law school. So I went to Hamline University School of Law, where I took all the major law classes, but I took every estate planning and tax class that I could. And so graduated from there in 2011. I also have my certified financial planner designation and certified trust and financial advisor designation. So I like to learn, and anything about estates, trusts, and tax, just I'll go and find the answer even if I don't know it.
So a full-time job and law school and getting through all of that, that had to be a hectic time for you.
Yeah, I didn't have much of a life for about four years.
Yeah, I can imagine. Wow. But it has certainly paid dividends for you and the clients of Wealth Enhancement Group. We appreciate you joining us today. And by the way, if phone lines are open at 651-989-9226, 651-989-9226, you can text the program at 81807. That is 81807. If you have a question for Kate about estates, financial planning, wills, trusts, etc. And Kate, I think a lot of people think, well, I'm not in a position where I need to do any sort of this stuff. I don't have a lot of assets. I don't have a lot of money. And that's probably the first mistake people make.
Right. Basically, if you have any asset that's going to pass to anybody at death and you care about who that asset passes to, you probably need an estate plan. At the very least, you'll want a will, just to kind of name who's going to manage your estate after your death and to make sure that it goes to the places you want it to go. And then even if you don't really, if you have a negative estate, you have all debt, I mean, you're still going to want a health care directive and or power of attorney, so that if you become incapacitated, you can name the person in that case to make the decisions either financial or health care wise for you when you cannot.
So at the bare minimum, a will is where anyone should start. You get a job, you get a career, you have credit cards, maybe you have a mortgage or a car payment. Just having some of this stuff in writing is imperative.
Right. I mean, it helps to, like I said, direct where you want your assets to go. If you have minor children, it kind of can protect those assets so you can keep it from them having sole access to it at age 18 or 21. You can actually make it so whoever ends up being the executive of your estate doesn't have to post bond of their personal assets. So you can, all of that within your will, you can do that. And so it just kind of maintains a little control, makes things easier for those who survive you.
One of the other things that gets complicated is in the area of family businesses. If there's mom and dad own a business and there's kids and maybe the kids are involved in the business, I'm sure in your career you've dealt with that circumstance as well. And that's a very important area to have good planning.
Oh, that's essential, because particularly if you have one kid who is involved in the business and you want to pass the business to, but your other kid isn't interested in it, how are you going to handle that? Because if you end up passing the entire business to the one child, what are you going to give to the other child? Or on the other hand, if you split it equally between the two kids, what is that one kid who's, you know, doing all the work going to feel about the other kid, you know, sharing in some of the profits? So you really want to do a lot of planning there to make sure that that business is passed in a way that'll make sure that it continues to run successfully without making your kids hate each other.
Another circumstance that comes up from time to time, and we hear this occasionally on our real estate show on Saturday mornings, is family-owned lakeshore property, a cabin up north. I suppose that's another one you've dealt with from time to time over the years, where how do you make sure that this is passed along and down the road everyone doesn't hate each other because they can't have the cabin on the 4th of July?
Right. Yeah. I think the way most people think that they'll just pass their cabin, they'll just name all of their kids as beneficiaries and they'll all own it equally and they'll all be happy and, you know, everybody will know when to show up. That rarely happens. I mean, even if all the kids want to actually go to the cabin, you know, they have to figure out, you know, who's going to cover the bills, who's going to, you know, take care of all the upkeep, who's going to be able to go at what time. And so if you do a little bit more planning, either leaving the cabin, say, to an irrevocable trust or put it in a limited liability company, either one of those will allow you to kind of dictate, particularly if you kind of have your kids there when you're creating these entities, dictate, you know, who's going to cover those bills, you know, how you can, how they can schedule, who has priority over scheduling the holidays and how that might rotate year to year. So if you kind of do that up front before you die, and so everybody's kind of on that same page when they inherit that cabin, that things are going to run much more smoothly.
Once again, wills, trusts, estates, financial planning in the spotlight. It is our Ask the Expert Hour. And by the way, our phone number, 651-989-9226, 651-989-9226, or text 81807 if you want to visit with Kate. She is in studio for the entire hour today, and we already have a ton of texts coming in on the program today. From our text line at 81807, we have a will, but we're wondering if we should have a trust as well. And when should a person set up a trust? How does that work and how are they different?
A trust is sometimes kind of considered to be a will substitute. If you have a trust, that'll actually cover most of the same things that a will will cover. But again, you're always going to want to have that will, even if it's just to say everything that's not in my trust should be left to my trust to be distributed per its terms. So if you have one or the other, you're still going to be able to pass your assets the way you want, usually in the exact same way. The difference of a trust over a will is that assets owned by that trust won't have to go through probate. So you'll be able to pass those assets much quicker than if you have to go through probate, which is big if you have assets in, say you have, you know, your home here in Minnesota, but then your cabin's in Wisconsin. If you don't have your cabin in Wisconsin in a trust, you're actually going to go through probate in both states, which slows things down even more. So that's the big thing. If you have assets in multiple states, then definitely you should have a trust. The other thing is if you're worried about privacy, if, you know, everything that goes through probate ends up part of public record. So if you don't want everybody to know what your assets were when you died, if you put that into revocable trust, then everything remains private. So nobody can look it up, you know, your nosy next door neighbor or whatever can't look it up in the records once probate is closed. And also trusts, if you have a lot of assets that aren't passing by beneficiary designations, so, you know, cash accounts, brokerage accounts, non-IRA accounts, trusts are usually cheaper. Well, they're more expensive to set up on the front end, but they're usually cheaper than going through probate at the end. So the more assets you have that don't already have beneficiary designations, the more likely it is you're probably going to save money by having that trust.
And probate is a dirty word, isn't it? I mean, it has these connotations of it. You really want to avoid that. Tell us about the pitfalls and why going through probate is not ideal.
Well, there's nothing wrong with going through probate. The big thing is, you know, it takes longer. I mean, you have to open up that probate process. But usually it's an informal probate, so the judge doesn't really need to be involved through most of that process. It's just because there's a legal process, there's just more steps that have to be gone through. And again, you're probably going to have to pay some attorney fees to help navigate you through probate. There are court costs that you're going to have to pay. So the big thing about probate that a lot of people are worried about is just the cost of going through it that you can avoid with revocable trust. And like I was saying before, anything that goes through probate does become part of public record because it is part of a court process. So if you are worried about people being able to look up your assets, again, that revocable trust is a good way to avoid that.
A quick break. We have more. Here are the numbers. Wills, trusts, estates, all in the spotlight today on our NSC Expert Hour. The number is 651-989-9226. 651-989-9226, or you can text 81807. We already have a lot of great texts lined up, and we'll go there in a moment. 81807 here on the CCO. It is our Ask the Expert Hour, and we're pleased to be joined by Kate Meyer from Wealth Enhancement Group, Wills, Trusts, Estates in the Spotlight this hour on the program. And you're invited to call 651-989-9226, 651-989-9226, or you can text 81807. And Kate has appeared with Bruce and Peg on Your Money, and you hear that Sunday mornings between 8:30 and 9:30 here on the CCO with Denny Long. And they have been around for a long, long time. Bruce has been on the air here for years with Your Money. Pleased to be joined by Kate on this Saturday live in studios. A quick follow-up from our text line. Ballpark, what is setting up a trust cost, or does it depend?
It depends. Yeah. First, it depends on the attorney you hire. Some attorneys, you know, they're more experienced, a bigger law firm, they're just going to charge more. And it also will be depend on how advanced your state is. If everything's going to go to adult children with the possibility of maybe some grandchildren, that'll be a lot cheaper than if you have that family cabin and a business and, you know, estate tax issues and all that. So it's going to depend. Probably the very low end would be $750 up to, you know, a couple thousand dollars per trust.
And, Kate, I would assume that a document like that needs to be managed, particularly when there are changes in state law.
Right, yeah. We always recommend that regardless of whether or not you have a will or trust, that you still review it every 3 to 5 years just to make sure it remains appropriate, first given, you know, your own changing goals for your state and also with changing estate laws. And that is really big because both in Minnesota and federally, estate laws have changed drastically within the last few years. So it's always good to go, and even if you're not going to change the document, to at least have it looked at to make sure it still makes sense.
Phone number is again 651-989-9226. You can text 81807, 81807. Let's go to Jack in St. Paul. Jack, you're on the air. Hello.
Oh, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm just wondering the pros and cons of just putting property into a life estate for adult children.
Personally, I don't really like life estates, particularly in Minnesota, when you can achieve most of that same goal by just putting a transfer on death deed on the property. With the life estate, once you give that life estate away, you can't take it back. So if you change your mind later on that maybe you don't want that child to get the property, or you want to add somebody else to that life estate, it is very difficult to change it, and that it ends up with the tax consequences for both you and that remainder holder. If you did a transfer on death deed instead, it's still going to skip probate. It's still going to go directly to your named beneficiary, but you still can change that. All you have to do is just file a new deed with the county if you change your mind. And the other issue with the life estate is that, say you end up wanting to sell that property, you're going to go to a nursing home, you want to downsize, you're not the only one who can sell that property now. The people who have that remainder interest in that life estate are also going to have to sign off on it, and they're actually going to have some income tax consequences because they actually do have an ownership interest in that property. So if your goal in this is just to make sure you're passing your property to your heirs without going through probate, and that's really the reason you're thinking of a life estate, in Minnesota, I would recommend the transfer on death deed instead.
Isn't one of the keys maintaining flexibility, protecting your interest, but maintain that flexibility going forward because things change?
Right. That's why I like that transfer on death deed much better than life estate, because with the life estate, you are removing a lot of flexibility in association with that property, where with the transfer on death deed, all you have to do is just file a new deed and you've gotten rid of the beneficiaries.
And one of the things you hear over and over, and it was true with my grandpa, this goes back a number of years. He wanted to make sure that the home stayed in the family and did some sort of mechanism. I'm sure you talk to people all the time where they want to keep property in the family. They want to keep the home in control of the family, and this is one of the mechanisms to do that.
Right. Yeah, a life estate will do that. But then once you die and it passes to that family member, they become, they own that property. They can do whatever they want with it. It's the only way to ensure that that property remains owned by family is to put it into some sort of entity which takes away that flexibility. So again, that's like an irrevocable trust or some sort of limited liability company or LLC.
Let's go to the phones again. Kathy in Maple Grove. Kathy, hello.
Hello. Yes, I have a question in regards to trust.
Okay.
And we've had a trust for about 20 years. We're in our 50s, and our kids are in college. We're looking at selling our home. And unfortunately, we sold our cabin. A lot of our assets have been used, unfortunately, because I've had a catastrophic illness. So I'm wondering, we've had this trust. We have not done anything with it in probably the last 10 years. Is it still prudent to have a trust, or at this point, do we even need a trust?
I think since you already have the trust, there's really no reason to get rid of it. I'm assuming you're talking about a revocable trust in this case. But since you've kind of already gone through the expense and the hassle of setting up that trust and retitling everything into that trust, there's really no reason to get rid of it. If you've spent most of your assets down, if you were looking to actually establish that trust, I'd say it probably doesn't make sense at this time. But there's no hurt to you or to your beneficiaries at all if you keep that trust. Because actually, if you were to become incapacitated, having your assets in that revocable trust as opposed to owning them outright will also kind of ease transition of management of those assets if you become incapacitated and you need to have somebody take over. So I don't see any reason why you would need to get rid of the trust.
One of the things I've heard is the term revocable and irrevocable when it comes to trust. And a little bit earlier, we brought up flexibility.
Yep.
An irrevocable trust, that sounds pretty set in concrete.
Yeah, it pretty much is.
Yeah, why would someone use that versus a revocable trust?
An irrevocable trust, I think one of the big planning issues with an irrevocable trust is anything that you have within that trust, since you've given up so much control of those assets, they are no longer in your estate for estate tax calculation purposes. So in our business at Wealth Enhancement Group, the irrevocable trust that we see the most would be the irrevocable life insurance trust, where you're putting life insurance in irrevocable trust so that death benefit remains out of your estate. That's really, for the most part, that's really the only reason I would see most people would need an irrevocable trust during their lifetimes, just because of the fact that you're giving up control over those assets. But another reason for irrevocable trust is, setting something up upon your death. So a lot of people, they have minor children or children who they don't think will be able to manage their inheritance if they inherit it right away. By having assets go into an irrevocable trust for the benefit of your children, you're able to actually maintain some control over how they can access that money and for what reasons and when. So when it comes to leaving assets to people, I think irrevocable trusts are much more useful than having them set up when you're still alive.
So, for example, for those children, if you want access to this money, you will have a job. You will finish college. Those types of...
Yep. Well, most people actually set it up where, you have a trustee in control of the money,
sure,
thing, and then the kids can access the money for health, education, maintenance, and support. Those are the main reasons. And then they say, maybe at age 25, they can get a third of those assets. And then at age 30, maybe they can get another half. So you're still giving them access to that, actually pretty wide access at the trustee's discretion, but you're still not giving them full access to go off, and spend on that Lamborghini or whatever.
Right. Yeah. Or a lot of trips to Mexico or
right,
whatever.
Yep.
Yeah. A quick break. We have more. Kate Meyer from Wealth and Enhancement Group. Wills, trusts, estates in the spotlight today. Phone lines are available. 651-989-9226. 651-989-9226. 9226, or you can text 81807. That is 81807 here on the CCO. It is our Ask the Expert Hour. Pleased to be joined by Kate Meyer from Wealth Enhancement Group, Wills Trust Estates. And by the way, our phone line, 651-989-9226, 651-989-9226. And we're trying this hour to focus on wills, trusts, estates, and those mechanisms. So if you get into something that gets off that path, we'll need to move on. Let's start on the phone lines. And Harold Maplewood. Harold, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Boy, it sounds like you almost need to be a lawyer nowadays. I want to know the best way to get rid of all my estates, my house, my equipment, everything, to leave it to one person if I decide to do that, or if I can sell it before. Or is there certain years that somebody, if I wanted to leave my house to somebody, or can I just say it goes to him automatically or whoever?
It kind of depends on who you're going to leave it to. If you don't have a will or some sort of beneficiary designation on that house in Minnesota, that would be a transfer on death deed. State law is going to cover who it goes to. So if you don't have some sort of mechanism dictating who you want to leave it to, it's going to go surviving spouse, then it would go to children. If you don't have children, then grandchildren. Or if you don't have any descendants, it'll go back up to your parents and then their descendants. So if you want to actually make sure that you're leaving that house to whom you want it to go to, the two best ways I would think to do that, if you don't really have any other assets out there, I'd say a transfer and death deed will probably work just fine. You will own that house right up until your death, and then it'll pass automatically to that beneficiary you've named on it. The other thing I would say is make sure you have a will, because then you can say, you know, I have this house, and when I die, I want it to go to this person. In both of those cases, you're going to be able to tell exactly who you want it, who to leave it to, and that's who it will go to. If you were to give it away before death, again, we were talking about flexibility earlier in the hour, you're giving up all flexibility with that house. You don't have any ownership interest in anymore, so if they want to evict you, they can. You probably will have to start paying them rent, so and things like that. And also, if you're worried about Medicaid, giving away your house might actually cause you more issues, because if you end up going on to Medicaid, or in Minnesota it's called medical assistance, if you go on to medical assistance within 5 years of giving away that house, you're actually not going to be eligible until a penalty period has passed. So when you're talking about making sure your assets go to whom you want them to go to, it's much better to leave it either via a will or some sort of beneficiary designation than it is to give it away during your lifetime, unless you're absolutely positive you're not going to need that asset anymore while you're living.
Now, I would assume this is where probate steps in. If he didn't have a will and he passed away, that probate would follow, you know, spouse, children,
yep,
grandchildren. If not, you go to your parents, and then it's relatives, cousins, aunts, uncles, etc.
Right.
They will find someone to give this property to.
Yep. They're called intestacy statutes, and it's different in every state, but generally speaking, it will go to your spouse first, and then to your descendants, and then if not descendants, then to your parents' descendants. So there is a very specific line of succession, and if you don't agree with that line of succession, then, you know, you're kind of out of luck. You gave up your chance to dictate who you want it to go to.
So that's where a will would come in, and that could be for any non-titled property. I mean, you have home, vehicles, et cetera. But,
yep,
but beyond that, if you have a grandfather clock in your will, you could say, I want the grandfather clock to go to my neighbor, whatever.
Yeah, and you can dictate down to the very minutest thing in your will what you want it to go, where you want it to go. And so, you know, if you have any concern about any of your assets, having that will or revocable trust, which, you know, like I was saying earlier, is kind of a will substitute, will let you dictate exactly whom you want to leave assets to.
And this is important as well. And you brought up flexibility. We talked about it earlier in the program. In a perfect world, you would get along great with your family, but that's not always the case. And there are people that don't want their assets going to their family for whatever reason,
right,
and that's their prerogative.
Yep, and yeah, by having that will, the state law is just there to cover you if you don't actually draft a document. There's nothing there that's saying that you have to leave assets to your family. And, well, There is a law that says you have to leave at least a portion of your assets to a surviving spouse. But beyond that, if you decide to completely disinherit your children, you know, they're doing fine or, you know, for whatever reason, you don't have to, by law, leave anything to them. So by drafting a will or irrevocable trust or doing a beneficiary designation, leaving that asset to somebody else, that is completely legal. I mean, they might come back and challenge it, but it would be very difficult for them to win.
To the phones we go again. Kathy and Edina. Kathy, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi. I'm wondering, I own a small condo and there's no mortgage on it. And about nine years ago, I drew up a quit claim deed and listed my two daughters as who it should go to. And actually as joint tenants, so if something should happen to one, it would go to the other one. And in the meantime, one of my daughters has passed away. Now, is this as good a protection as payable on death or transfer on death, or do I need to do something else?
Well, as long as they're all listed as joint tenants with rights of survivorship, when your one daughter died, the other two of you remained the two joint owners, and so it's going to pass to the sole survivor of that. So should you predecease your daughter, it will pass automatically to her outright. The difference between joint tenants with rights of survivorship versus a transfer on death deed is you are now both totally owners of that property. You both have an undivided interest in that property, which means it is subject to either one of your creditors. And again, as I was saying earlier, if you were on it to sell that property, your daughter were going to have to sign off on that, and there might be income tax purposes. But the way that the property is treated upon death is virtually the same with a joint tenants with rights of survivorship versus a transfer on death deed. It's going to pass automatically to the surviving owner of that property. So in that regard, you don't need to change anything unless you're worried, again, about that flexibility to sell that property if you want to, or if you're worried at one point your daughter might have some creditor issues, in which case you may want to take her off and then do that transfer on death deed.
Phone number is 651-989-9226. 651-989-9226. You can text 81807, and that is 81807. And those are circumstances when people are planning their retirement and their financial future and what happens with all my stuff, homes, vehicles, other assets. Having a look at the whole picture is a big part of it,
right,
and helps you do your job is getting a complete understanding of where people are at, mm-hmm, what their wishes are.
Right. Yeah. If I draft an estate plan for somebody, I need to know where all of their assets are, who all of their beneficiary designations are, who all of the family members are, even if they don't want to leave assets to any of them. Just so you kind of get that whole picture so I can make sure I'm giving you the best advice I can. If you leave something out, I might leave out something that actually might work really well for you in my suggestions because I wasn't aware that it was an option for you. So the more information you can give your estate planner, the better advice you're going to get.
And Kate, is it one of those things where you give people a number of options? Or is it, here's what I would do, but here's another mechanism? Do you typically lay that out for people?
I like to give them a number of options, just sure, so you know that there are different ways to do it. But it kind of depending on whether or not I have a strong opinion of it or if I really think that one idea is better than the other, I'll try to kind of leave it up to the client to decide, just because they obviously know themselves the best. So I don't want to push them in one way or the other unless, like, for estate tax purposes, I think that one way just might work better for them. But I always want to make sure I give them all their options and give the pros and cons of each one.
People move around. There are snowbirds. They live in Minnesota, part of the year in Arizona or Florida. And from our text line, our estate planning was completed in Minnesota. We are now Florida residents. I would assume that's fairly typical as,
yeah,
people say, hey, I'm going to live full time somewhere else. I suppose that plan may need to change or may need to be tweaked based on Florida law.
Yeah, I would. Your documents are completely valid in Florida. They will do what they're supposed to for the most part in Florida. But there are different laws in Florida versus Minnesota, particularly when it comes to elderly clients, just because Florida has a large elderly population. So if you intend on, and if you're now Florida residents and you intend on staying there, I would definitely make sure that I had my documents updated to reflect Florida law versus Minnesota law, just because there are some tweaks in it that, you know, wording in a document can make a big difference. And even if your will ends up being just fine, at the very least, I would make sure I was drafting durable powers of attorney and healthcare directives based off of Florida's statutory language versus Minnesota's, because that those can that can differ widely from state to state.
Follow-up to that is, say you still live in Minnesota full-time, maybe you're a snowbird part-time, but you have kids that are around the country and are part of your estate plan and part of your will and all of that sort of thing. Do you need to consider where your heirs live?
Yeah, it might make a difference. Usually it'll have more to do with, you know, the taxes associated with where your kids are living than anything. Sometimes you may want to think about laws having to do with asset protection. So say you have a kid living in Illinois versus one in Minnesota. In Illinois, they have much better asset protection around retirement plans than Minnesota does. So you might want to plan differently for that Minnesota heir than you would for that Illinois heir, just because, you know, if they run into legal difficulties, the heir in Illinois is going to have more protections probably. So sometimes you want to take that into consideration. But for the most part, if you're just kind of leaving assets to them outright, there's really the state that matters is the state that you or yourself are residing in.
Good one from the text line. 44-year-old single woman. I don't have a will, but I'd like to get it set up. I don't know where to start. How do I go about doing that?
That way, I would recommend finding an attorney. Sometimes it's speak to your friends and neighbors and see if they have any referrals. If you have some sort of a financial advisor is always going to have referrals of attorneys that they like to work with. I would recommend speaking to an attorney versus using one of those will-making softwares, because I review a lot of documents in my position because, you know, I usually provide a quick summary. And I can always tell the documents that are drafted by a will drafting software because there are always mistakes in it. And if you don't know, you know, if you're not familiar with estate planning documents, you're not going to know that there's a mistake in there. So speaking to an attorney, you're speaking to the attorney more for the advice than for the document. And so just kind of throwing that out there, because I know a lot of people who don't have a lot of assets will go automatically to save money to that will making software. And that might not actually end up saving you money in the end.
And probate could get involved. If there are mistakes, I would assume that would be the end result.
Yeah. I mean, well, probate, you're going to go through probate anyway if you have a will or nothing at all. But yeah, there are going to be more difficulties if the will is unclear. Or, you know, I've seen circular references. I've seen, you know, somebody leaving an asset to a child in trust and then naming the child as trustee, which kind of defeats the purpose. All of those little things that unintended consequences that you don't know you're doing incorrectly when you're filling out that form will just make things so they don't pass as intended.
Let's go to the phones again. Sherry in Wyoming. Sherry, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Kate. I have a question for you regarding, I'm a trustee of my son's home. His father passed away in 2015, and a quick claim deed was done and put me down as the trustee of the home. So the question I have is, one is, if something were to happen to me while I am still listed as the trustee, my son who is now 23, what would he need to do in order to make sure that legally he would be the owner of that house? And then the other question is that then do I do a quick claim deed in order to take it out of my name as a trustee and make sure that he is on it? And should he be the only one on the house? Thank you.
That I'm not going to really be able to answer this question because it depends entirely on what that trust document says. It sounds like that home has been left to a trust for your son's benefit, probably for a certain period of time until he reaches a certain age, in which case, at what point it'll pay out to him. I'm just guessing this based on the documents I tend to look at. So in that case, the trust document is going to tell you who's going to be a successor trustee if something happens to you. So in that case, you want to read the document. And usually, you know, I name so-and-so as trustee. If that person is unable or unwilling to act, then I name so-and-so as trustee. So in that case, you should be protected, because then if something happens to you, it's going to remain in trust and it's still going to be your son's in trust, but just another trustee is going to take over management of that. And then probably at some, when your son reaches a certain age, that trust is going to pay out to him at that point. And that's when you would do that quit claim deed to take the home out of the trust and put it into his name. So it's all, you want to read that trust document and say what it says about what happens if something happens to the trustee and when that home will be paid out of that trust to your son.
Quick break. We have more with Kate Meyer from Wealth and Enhancement Group, wills, trusts, and estates. We have a bunch of texts and phone calls to get to before we run out of time. The hour has gone very quick. It's amazing. It's been a blur. Once again, Kate Meyer in studio. By the way, Your Money, Bruce Helmer, Peg Webb, Sunday mornings here on CCO between 8:30 and 9:30. Kate Meyer in from Wealth Enhancement Group. It is our SEX, but our wills, trusts, and estates. Let's grab a couple from the text line here real quick. Is life insurance exempt from inheritance tax?
No, it's not. It is, you know, you're always hearing about life insurance being exempt from taxes, but in that case, they're always talking about income taxes. It passes income tax free to your heirs, but it does actually, it can increase your state to a point where your state ends up paying estate taxes or inheritance taxes, depending on the state you live in. So you always want to make sure that that life insurance itself does not, like Minnesota has an estate tax exclusion amount of $2.7 million this year. So if your amount of assets is under $2.7 million, you're not going to owe estate taxes. But if you look at that life insurance policy, that might actually push you over the $2.7 million. Or, you know, if you already have over $2.7 million, then obviously the life insurance is just going to be additional taxable asset. So long answer to a short question, yes, life insurance is subject to both estate and inheritance taxes.
Another one from the text line, can stocks be included in an irrevocable trust?
They can be. I don't really want to go into much more detail than that because I'm not exactly sure why that question is being asked. But yeah, irrevocable trusts can own a wide variety of assets, and stocks and bonds are very typical for, particularly for estate planning and beneficiary planning purposes. They are taxed at a higher tax rate, just because they're condensed rates for trust-owned assets. But other than that, irrevocable trust can own pretty much what an individual can own.
And I suppose you want to go into that with your eyes wide open. You want to know what that really means when you put any asset into an irrevocable trust.
Right, yeah. You definitely want to review why you're setting that trust up and figure out if maybe there's a different way to accomplish your goals so you can maintain that flexibility we've kind of been mentioning throughout the hour.
All right, time for one quick call. Let's go to Kathy. You're on the air. Hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a revocable trust for my financial holdings and real estate. When I die, my two children, what do they do? Do they go probate?
They'll be able to skip probate. I'm assuming you've named your children as successor trustees in this trust. They would basically start to collect all of that trust-owned assets and then just start, after paying all of your bills and your debt off first, they'll just start distributing the assets the way that your trust tells them to. So they just need to follow. Your trust should have set out what happens upon your death. So usually it's, you know, upon my death, all of my bills should be paid, taxes should be paid, you know, things like that. So they should just kind of follow. Hopefully that trust is set up well enough. It kind of gives them a roadmap on what they're supposed to do. But, yeah, they do not have to go through probate. They don't have to open that whole probate process because that revocable trust keeps things out of probate. It passes through contract law instead of probate law at this point.
Well, Kate, it's been a pleasure. A very quick hour. We're already out of time. We apologize to those folks that weren't able to get on the air and we weren't able to get to their text today. By the way, Bruce, Peg, Your Money, Wealth and Enhancement Group tomorrow between 8:30 and 9:30. And once again, Kate, a pleasure to visit with you. How do they reach you?
You can actually call Wealth Enhancement Group directly, and our marketing department will be able to pass you on to me either through email or give me your phone number so I can call you back.
All right. Have a great weekend. Thanks.
Thank you. You too.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.